Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Empire. A new team gets set to kick off.
Taking a different approach, you know, we're looking at it from the way we're marketing to fans and the way we're selling tickets to even how we're building the roster of the club. Like, we're doing it unlike anybody's ever done before.
That's Nick Kelly, president of the newest MLS team, Charlotte FC, and their kickoff will come with a different perspective. This is the Future Sport Podcast. I'm Bram Weinstein. Nick Kelly's background is with Anheuser-Busch, so he knows how to work with teams and with leagues and activate fans. Now he's on the other side of the table. And in the case of Charlotte FC, it's an attempt to activate an entire community, not unlike the way Atlanta, Portland, and Seattle grabbed their soccer fan bases. And it's the way he is looking at this build that is unique. Our guest this week is Nick Kelly. He is the new president of the newest team in professional sports, Charlotte FC of the MLS. Thank you so much for joining us, Nick.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Where do you start? We have a new team, new everything. I don't even know what to start with you. Where do you start when you're talking about day-to-day operations of a brand new team?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's, you know, keeping the eye on end of February and making sure that we have not left any stone unturned to do everything we can to put a really competitive team on the field, and more importantly, create an environment within Bank of America Stadium that is truly unique to Charlotte Football Club.
So what do you mean by that? What are you going to try to do in the stadium to attract a new fan base to your games?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just one of those things that people have been to hundreds of NFL games for the Panthers or college football games here at Bank of America, but they've never actually been to an MLS match that has, you know, a home field advantage. So we're going to create, you know, a fan section with our supporters group that has, you know, the types of cheers and the type of game day environment that, you know, rivals European clubs, looks a lot like the success we've seen down in Atlanta or in Portland. And but it'll be uniquely us. And so we've been working closely with our supporters groups to understand the types of cheers they want to do, the type of traditions they want to create. And I think our fans will be extremely impressed come first match.
You know, it's interesting. I'm up here in Washington. I'm the voice of the Washington football team. We're going through a rebrand, and obviously it's very different. This team's been around for 90 years, but they're going through the same process where they're trying to figure out what are the new things that are going to happen for the supporters in the stadium. And the argument that happens here a lot with it is how much of that is just organic and how much of that can you actually kind of try to implant? And you guys are brand new, you know, brand new trying to do this.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think that the hard thing is going to be is, especially in soccer, is we can kind of control, call it the first 20 minutes before the match actually starts. But, you know, once the game starts, it's not like basketball or football where, you know, during a TV timeout, I can go and like run a hype video or a song that gets the crowd excited. Like, you know, it's truly in our hands to drive what those traditions and those game day cultures like. And it's a little bit scary that, you know, you don't have a lot of that control, but we've been working really closely with our fans to make sure that we have at least an understanding of what we can do to support it. But like you said, like, we're going to have some stuff that fails, and I think that that's okay, but we have to let some of this come to us and then be smart enough to acknowledge, like, hey, that we've got a good thing here.
So you mentioned Atlanta, and their team has really resonated with that region, and they are close, obviously, regionally to you. What have you learned about watching what Atlanta has done to try to build a fan base in Charlotte?
Yeah, they've done an amazing job of reaching out early to just different pockets of the city. I mean, they have, you know, probably one of the most diverse fan bases in all sports, and we try to replicate that. You know, we've done a lot of stuff targeted towards the Hispanic community, the African-American community, young, old, you name it. Like, we've tried to go out there and make sure everybody feels welcome and that this can be their team. I think the other thing we see from them is that they do kind of what I just hinted towards, is they control the kind of the game day environment leading up until the whistle starts at the match. And then after that, man, their fans take over and they do an amazing job.
Let me talk about your background a little bit. It feels a touch unusual for this position to come in to run day-to-day operations of a sports team. You come from a marketing side. You had worked with Anheuser-Busch with sports, obviously, and a number of different activations and marketing levels. And I want to simplify, obviously, what you did. Could you kind of tell me about that transition for you from where you're going from to what you're going to?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's been a lot easier than I thought because, you know, I oversaw about 800 employees across the company that range from the Clydesdale handlers to our zookeepers. But, you know, I've spent a bunch of my time really focused on our sports marketing, and that included, you know, deals with more than 100 pro teams, football, baseball, basketball, league partnerships with the NFL or MLB. And, you know, our job was really to kind of run a business that helped, you know, grow the sport. That was kind of our responsibility, but also helped us sell beer. And I think that, you know, having worked with some of the biggest brands like Budweiser and Bud Light and launching new ones like Michelob Ultra, you know, I've seen a lot of success and a lot of failure, and bringing that to, you know, building a club has actually helped, because we move quick and we have to accept, you know, when something's working and do it 10 times more. And then when something fails, acknowledge it and move on. And I think just having experience that, it helps. But to your point, like, yeah, I didn't come from a previous soccer team or even like in a league or anything. So like, it's definitely a risk with our owner, but I think you have to work 10 times harder to prove that this wasn't a mistake.
You know, what I think is interesting about it, though, is it is a really modern approach that this team, at least, is going to try something here with you that is not a traditional model, but we're not in a traditional time anymore. Modern fans want different things. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's it, right? And I think that the other thing is, too, is just that, you know, we're taking a different approach. You know, we're looking at it from the way we're marketing to fans and the way we're selling tickets to even how we're building the roster of the club. Like, we're doing it unlike anybody's ever done before. You know, you look at our roster building, we've got 8 players on the roster, and that's more than anybody's ever had at this point in an expansion season. So we're doing everything differently because we actually think it's going to work. We're not doing it for the sake of being different. We want the competitive advantage on and off the field. And so, you know, while my background or even our sporting director's background are different, like, it's on purpose.
Take me through being on the other side of this now. And I know it's new for you, but you were the one working with the teams with all of these different things. And now you're on the other side talking to them about what you want. How is your kind of viewpoint of looking at it from the point of view of a team and activating your fan bases? How has that changed for you so far?
I actually think it's helped a ton, our partners of, you know, I probably have a far greater appreciation than most team presidents for the value that they can bring to an organization. Now, I need the Coca-Colas of the world or the Bud Lights or the Bojangles to actually take our brand and, you know, give away tickets, post like the official tailgating headquarters of Charlotte FC. Like, we need their help to drive awareness, because if we're being perfectly honest, like, we're a new club that hasn't even played a single match yet, and we need the vehicles of these types of companies in the Carolinas, North and South, to like promote us, to push us out there. And, you know, I don't see it as a transactional relationship. And even on the, you know, ticket sales side, is we want our fans who actually purchase those tickets to show up. And we have an appreciation for the fact that you may want to go sell that on the secondary market, but we want it to be a hard decision for you to make, to be like, I'm not going to go tonight. I'm going to go make a couple dollars, because we want to work with you to create that pride that you've been to every match this year. You've cheered the team, and we've created a real home field that's like hard for teams to play against. And so having just that different perspective has helped. And I also think just in general, like, we're fully transparent, which is the one thing I always wanted when I was on the other side of the table, was the transparency. And we're transparent on, like, you know, what did we expect from our partners and what they expect from us. And the same thing with our fans, our players, our coaches, and our staff. And I think that level has actually helped a lot in building a trust early on to create that fan base and to create that partnership with everybody in the market.
To your point that, you know, people who are going to come to see your team play, they've been to the stadium before, probably many times, to see the Panthers or to see a college football game that has occurred there. I assume you want this environment to be uniquely Charlotte FC's. So how do you kind of view, outside of trying to build whatever the traditions are going to be of your fan base, how are you looking at what is happening in and around the stadium to try to make this different and make it a soccer home?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're really trying to have this feel like if we had a soccer game on a Saturday night and then a Panthers game on a Sunday afternoon, we want it to feel like you're almost in two different buildings. We're starting with the march of our supporters down Mint Street to come into the game to, us allowing them to bring in smoke and flags and drums and literally create an amazing supporter section behind the east end zone. Like that, it'll feel the minute you get in the bowl like you're in an entirely different event, and that's critically important to us because, you know, for our fans to still spend their hard-earned dollars to come to two events a weekend is a lot to ask. So what we've seen is that we have very little overlap between the fans that are going to come to our games and the fans that would come on Sunday to the Panthers. So we're not really competing with ourselves, but it's also we want to have a reason why they're coming to us and they may not be coming to that Clemson game on Saturday.
Let's talk about outreach. Have you guys thought through what platforms do you think are going to be the way you're going to communicate to your fan base? Are you looking solely at digital? Are you thinking traditional media? How are you considering the communication between you and a new burgeoning fan base?
Checked all the boxes right now. I think that the most efficient one for us and what's been the most engaging has been our traditional social stuff. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you know, we're launching a TikTok in a couple weeks. But I think that's been the most, open line of communication for us to release real-time news and talk to our fans. But it was important for us this year in year one to get free over-the-air broadcasts across both North and South Carolina. So we've got about 11 TV affiliates that if you have a TV in North Carolina or South Carolina, you can watch us for free. And that's a little bit rare compared to a lot of other MLS teams where they have either an RSN or they're streaming it. Like, so making it available to 16 million people in North Carolina on TV in South Carolina was important. So that for us is we're very much going the traditional route in year one, as well as been a lot of focus on the emerging platform.
So you had mentioned, obviously you're going to try to run the gamut to bring in fans of all ages, demographics, all that type of stuff. Do you think there is a core demographic in your region that you think can become kind of the burgeoning fan base of Charlotte? Is it a young audience? Is it an older one? How are you guys viewing that?
No, we'd be even looking at like the season ticket sales, which is probably the best data point we have right now, or even our social media following and the events we have. You know, our fan base is, we're averaging, somewhere around 27 years old is what we're seeing for, the people that are engaging with our brand. So it's extremely young. The other thing is too, it's so diverse. We over index, on the Hispanic fan. We actually have just like an extremely, balanced, male and female fan base as it relates to our events, our ticket, database, et cetera. And what we've seen too is just that it pushed us to make sure that we're cognizant of that when we're marketing and when we're communicating and we're hosting events, that it is welcoming for all and it's tailored towards a younger audience because, the type of event we may host for the Carolina Panthers may be a little bit more high end and, targeted towards a 40, 50 year old. And where for us, it's all high energy. It's a little bit more approachable. We wanted to feel like and represent our fan base, and that's younger and more diverse.
The guy from Anheuser-Busch, of course, is going to throw the party. That man, seems like you're in the right spot.
I've done it. I feel like it's a one trick I have, and so I use it to my fullest.
Sounds like you're in the right spot. Take me back to put on your hat for Anheuser-Busch for a moment, because I'm sure you'd worked with soccer clubs and leagues for a while there. Obviously it is still a growing market and a growing sport in this country. What have you seen from that perspective of where money is going, growth, demographics, all of that? Where have you seen soccer in its kind of growth trajectory over the last 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, I we were fortunate enough when I was at AB that we sponsored FIFA and the World Cup and the U.S. men's and women's team in Mexico, you name it. And really, it's continuing to grow. And just say, soccer's been saying that for 20 years. I'm starting to see it as you see the recent TV deals for EPL or La Liga, and they're paying hundreds of millions of dollars for the broadcast rights to teams that play 5, 6, 8 hours ahead of us. And so it shows just a growing passion here in the United States for soccer. But man, the next 4 years are critically important to us because the men's team has to do extremely well and not only qualify for the World Cup in 22, but to do well and truly compete, because that'll give us the momentum we need to be hosting the World Cup in 2026 and shortly followed by the Olympics in 28, is that we have to get the next 4, 8 years right as a country, and, you know, the responsibility is on the marketing executives, the team executives like myself, the MLS, and even the federation to take advantage of all the excitement that we're going to build up. And this is make or break for us. If MLS is going to become one of those big four sports in North America, they have to take advantage of these windows. And there's a lot of really smart people at the MLS and across the league that know this, and there's tons of plans in place to do it. But we really have to try and use these moments to capture the fans, to bring them in, to make this like not only a powerhouse globally, but, you know, be really one of the leading sports in all of the United States.
That's really interesting. Congratulations on the new job. Good luck with the new team. That's a really cool thing to be a part of, to be a first of. It's amazing. Nick Kelly's president of Charlotte FC. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having us.
On the next Future Sport podcast, an entire league is ready to ramp back up.
The pandemic hitting kind of put a pivot to those discussions, or a hold in some cases. But we had a lot of interest in Las Vegas. We had multiple interested parties in that deal. And then, of course, we were in advanced talks when the pandemic hit with Fort Worth.
That's Nick Sakavich, commissioner of the National Lacrosse League, where their long COVID shutdown is finally coming to an end. That will do it for this episode. As always, the future is now. This is the Future Sport Podcast. I'm Bram Weinstein.